6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/listen. That's forhers.com/listen. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Do you hear that? Do you see that? There's more to what you see and hear in this shifted reality. I hear my guardian angel talking to me. This is Maria, and I have a guardian angel named Fija. Together, we will talk to you about the different shifted realities. Join us. You are listening to Ghosts in the Valley podcast.
And I am Al Cooley, host of Ghosts in the Valley podcast. Today, I have a past guest on, Beth Darlington. Beth is a paranormal investigator, an instructor, a historian. Beth is also the founder of the Access Paranormal Learning Lounge on Facebook. The past 4 years in podcasting, I've become online friends with many of my guests. Beth is one of those that I can truly call my friend. That is what I love, you know, most about this podcast. I can connect with people with the same interest as myself. And I constantly keep learning from my guests. The paranormal is a wide field. I mean, a field that I think is growing more and more each passing day. And with all that being said, welcome back to the show, Beth. It's an honor having you back on.
Oh, and it's been an honor to actually join once again on this fantastic show.
And since I've had you on, 2019, I was looking back at my archives and I thought it was sooner than that, but I guess it's been a minute, you know. A lot has happened in the last couple of years with the pandemic. I'm sure it's affected your investigations and everything.
Oh, it's hugely done so, I think, for so many as well. You know, last time we spoke, I've literally only been in the UK, not even a week or two, if that. And in that time, 6 months into it, I had all these plans about being able to go out, investigate locations and going to events and really excited about cracking into the scene here and seeing Mike and learning a lot more. That's what happened for 6 months, and then COVID reared its ugly head. So
you grew up in Australia, correct?
That is true, yes.
And then you moved to England, and then you moved back to Australia, correct?
That's exactly right, yeah.
Okay, kind of like your hopscotch are back and forth, you know.
It's funny, in hindsight, part of me wishes I had stayed here and not moved back to Australia. But then again, if I hadn't, I wouldn't have helped create the paranormal community that is there today. And Access Paranormal would never have been created. So, you know, we sit there and think, I loved being here at the time, but I felt I had to go back because the person I was with at the time, their visa was running out. So we moved back to Australia. But, you know, actually, in hindsight, it was good that I was there. And then what knowledge I was able to gain from there and the people and the networking I was able to do and bring that back over here has actually helped. But yeah, I know it's like there, you know, I'm back in the UK, then Australia, then back over here. But yeah, definitely 100% here. That's it, not leaving.
Yeah, I had a past guest on not long ago, William Tabone.
Oh, he's lovely.
paranormal investigator out of Australia, and I just bought his book, which is fantastic. And he had nothing but rave reviews for you. And so I was just wondering, how do you know William Thibone?
Oh my goodness, such a lovely gentleman, as you know. Like, I often I use him as a bit of a sounding board when it came to meeting and networking with people in Australia. I thought if you had a problem with him, or if you didn't like him face value, then there was something wrong with you. So he was that kind of guy, that kind of lovable person. And so I met him basically, like, as with you, through the internet. They reached out to me, him and his beautiful wife, Mandy. And I actually was talking with them. They came along to what was known as the very first Paracon Australia, which is the first paranormal conference of recent times in Australia. And they came along, and that's when I first physically met them. And then we got talking over time, probably maybe about a year or two afterwards. And the Kling brothers, who were very well known for the series of Ghost Lab, were chatting with them, and they said, look, we'd love to come to Australia. And they said, well, and they approached me, as far as like Bill and his wife, do you want to, you know, how about we do a joint thing with Sydney and Melbourne for them to come over? And we organized it, and it was one of the most successful, I guess you could say, international guests that came to Australia at that time. We had such a great time. The guys had such a great time. And literally, you know, they were like my family. And, you know, I still consider them as such as well. They're such great people. You know, I went traveling with them in Gettysburg as well. So when I flew over there, and we went to, you know, went to the battlefields, also with the Kling brothers as well. We stayed at their home, all this kind of stuff. So it literally just seemed to grow. And I think that's what can kind of happen when you get used to people, spending time with people and sharing ideas, and then it just grows even more. And I just really think, again, like, you know, he may obviously think highly of me, but I equally think highly of them as well. And they're really good people. And
because I reached out to his wife to be on the show, and I think she was having at the time, she was having some medical issues. So he graciously said, I'll come on. You know, I've got a book coming out. And so that's awesome, you know. And yeah, he was fantastic, a nice guy. And I thought, you know, what a small world, you know, that he knew you. And I just was curious if you did investigations together.
Oh, yeah, we've investigated, as I said, in America, all different locations. They've come up to Sydney. I've gone down to Melbourne when I was living there. And it's that kind of thing. And I'd stay at their place as well. I've met all their children many times. You know, and I say children now, they're teenagers. You know,
right.
Oh, they just, like, you know, they're grown up now. They have jobs. When did that happen?
Right. You don't think yourself of getting older until you see somebody else, especially a child that's now driving, you know.
Yes, that's exactly right. Oh, well, so-and-so, he's got this job, and this one, you know, this son's got a girlfriend now. And they're like, hang on, whoa. They're like, why? Where did this happen? No, it was really good. And they are really good people.
I mean, you know, and I've had past guests on from JT, who is a host of the Paranormal Sun out of New Zealand. And then I had William Thibone, you know, out of Australia, yourself out of England, myself in the States, you know. And to me, it doesn't matter what part of the world you live at. It's almost these stories are all the same.
I noticed that now when I'm actually now, obviously there's no restrictions here at the moment with COVID at the moment. So, you know, as far as like travel or the enforcing of face coverings, although it's encouraged, but it's a guideline. But still, that means events and investigations can continue. Like, people can actually go out to locations where people are feeling this activity occurring. And that's been really good, because I'm finally gradually getting back in. Like, literally, this is where I wanted to be a year and a half ago when I first spoke to you. You know, wanted to be. I'm finally gradually getting there, and I'm experiencing some interesting phenomena. I'm seeing other people experience interesting phenomena, and it's nice just to be out there in the field and getting out there and seeing and helping finding answers for people. And it's just, oh, but then again, seeing it from a different perspective, where you're in another country, living in another country, and seeing their methods. And the history is very different here too, of course. It's a lot more varied, and it's a lot more, obviously, there's 2,000 years worth of written history, basically. But back in Australia, you've got beautiful Indigenous Australian culture, which is all spoken. So you've got 70,000 years worth of history, but you don't have it written down. So it's a lot harder to try and investigate some locations as it would be here. So, you know, in Australia, there's about 200 years. Here, it's 2,000 years. So And it just makes investigating so much more incredible in that way, where something might happen. So is it located to the location? Is it located to the people? What's the phenomena? Oh, it's fascinating stuff. And again, it's finally nice to have that after, you know, pretty much the 2 years of crap that we've had. You know, it's nice to be able to have that refreshing door opened and just hope that it stays open and COVID goes its merry way. And I'm being very, very careful with my language in that way.
Before we go any further, I want to congratulate you on your engagement.
Oh, thank you.
I've seen that, you know, you're getting married. And is your fiance interested in the paranormal field as well?
Well, he's curious, very curious. I think he's intrigued. I'm not sure 100%, but when there comes to things that he comes across, like I think recently he found a book about all the different cemeteries in London. He's like, oh, you have to read this book. So I think he's fascinated. So he's not active, but he's definitely interested. So that kind of makes a big difference, and a huge supporter for me. Just loves it. Just thinks, yeah. And when I went on the weekend to an investigation, he goes, okay, now have a great time. I said, of course I will. He goes, and don't bring anything home. I said, but apparently there's nothing that exists. Why would I do that? It's like,
well, that's why I have a cross right here on my wall and behind me, you know.
There you go, making sure.
I'm going to try to fix the audio problems I'm having with Beth since we are 4,000 miles apart. I'll be right back right after these brief messages.
Ghost stories are always scarier when they're told by the very people who experience them. Hi, I'm Becky.
And I'm Diana.
And we're the hosts of the Homespun Haints podcast.
We talk to people just like you who've come face to face with ghosts, demons, haints, and other strange paranormal phenomena. All of it makes for a chilling good time.
So grab yourself a sweet tea, turn off the lights, and listen to some eerie, true ghost stories on Homespun Haints, wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm not scared. Are you?
Hello, this is JT, the host of The Paranormal Sun, coming to you live from Tower Studios here in Middle Earth, and you are listening to my friend Al on the Ghosts in the Valley podcast.
Yeah, one of my couple questions here. One is orbs. This seems to me to be like one of the least favorite topics, you know, that most podcasters want to talk about, you know, including myself, because, you know, you get people, it doesn't matter if it is a true orb. I mean, you have people that will say it's a dust particle or a lint. And I came across something really interesting that you had posted about the great orb debate, you know, about the mother films her paranormal activity in her infant's cot, you know, above his crib.
Yeah, it's and the thing is, it's the hardest thing when it comes to orbs is that, and like you say, it's like it's really kind of almost divides a paranormal community a little bit. Like if people go, oh, I'm a skeptical believer, but then you go, okay, so what do you think of orbs? And suddenly they know exactly what they think. So you literally, it's like it divides the waters. So people go, I really believe in them. I think there is a legitimacy of the fact they exist. And there are people like, there's no way on God's green earth this could actually happen. It's all just, you know, it's all stuff that can be explained with dust and moisture and all sorts of things. So, yes, I think there's that also when, say, for instance, with the child and the cot and the whole orb, like you mentioned, again, you're dealing, again, it's a parent watching video footage of their child. So, again, there's an emotional connection to make sure the child is okay and mm-hmm. safe. So you're dealing with that as well. It also is night vision. It's the grayed out night vision they happen to have on their child. And so everything shows up on there, like literally any type of dust, any type of moisture will show up. But if it's not, and they say, oh, but no, it's the first time I've seen this happen. It's like, yeah, but what time of year has it been? Like, you're not saying you don't clean your house, you know, you're going to have spirit orbs everywhere. Like, if that's the case, my place would be infested. It's, you know, it's a bit of balance. It's taking into consideration, okay, so there's a mother filming her child. They're in a room that, you know, it's got lots of carpet, so that's going to hold a lot more dust as opposed to not often with flat surfaces. And then little things like that, you keep that in consideration. You take that in and then you go, okay, so what else could be happening here? And then children do react to certain things. I know a lot of people I've worked with over the years are the mediums that say that children will pick up potentially something from a spirit perspective more so than humans. So you take that into consideration. It's so many layers to it. So many layers.
Yeah, you had mentioned, you know, like going to Gettysburg. You know, and that's where I've seen most of my orbs. You know, it's like, it's astounding to what I captured there, you know, especially over the battlefields and then some of these homes that were, the ghosts were. I'm just like, there's so many orbs everywhere. And to me, it was hard to say, okay, that's all dust particles, mm-hmm. you know, or moisture. And that's because it happened different nights and different times and same event, same outcome.
Absolutely. And I know people that have seen them with their naked eye, like literally have physically seen an orb that is glowing, that it has its own light source, and it's traveled a certain distance and it will stop, and then it will either disappear or zoom up or zoom down, or however its behavior is not normal, not something that we can explain. So there are people that physically have seen orbs, and you can't say to that person, well, you didn't see that. Like, well, of course they have. So I, from a recording perspective, I'm a fairly skeptical, but at the same time, people have actually physically seen them as well. So we can't completely rule it out.
Yeah. You know, it's like anything, like even being a paranormal investigator, you want to go and rule out that it's not a ghost or spirit. I mean, it could be a pipe or something banging against a house, you know, but when it's not, it's not, you know.
Yeah.
And I think the same is true with orbs. But on that clip that you had posted, there was over 10 million views.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. It was. And again, it's like a, it's like I said, it's the faux pas of the Australian or any type of paranormal community. It's like literally, it's like you mentioned the O word. And if you say that in public, people kind of look at you strangely. But no, orbs, people, it's orbs. And it literally is that kind of thing where it draws so much confliction with people, because some people are very, very quick to dismiss it. And I understand that 100%. But I've always been somebody that tries to be as open as possible. And I will sway towards the skeptic side quite a bit sometimes. And there's other things I'm like, I don't know. And I sway towards they say believer side, but more open to the, you know, paranormal phenomena side. And I think it's important to know that people can sway either side, but just be open to the fact that, well, we don't really know that. Do we, you know, yes, a majority of it can, from a recording perspective, could possibly be attributed to that. But at the end of the day, you know, if someone's experiencing that, or they've seen it, or there's been something that's followed afterwards, like, let's explore that. Let's not just suddenly shut it down, because if you shut it down too much, you know, you're walking around with a bias already that's knocking out any possible openness about, you know, what could actually happen. We don't know exactly how this world works 100%.
I agree. You had mentioned a few years back that what scared you the most was demonic possession. And then you came back and said that something may scare you even more. We didn't touch about on this last time we talked, and that was SHC, the spontaneous human combustion.
Yes, that's right. It's still there. I'm still scared.
So I wanted to talk to you a little bit about that, because we didn't touch on that last time.
It does. It so does, because it's such... I think it's the fact that it's something I won't have ever control over. It's a type of phenomena. Like, of course, I'm talking about the paranormal generally. It's spontaneous phenomena anyway. You're not going to have control of that too. But this is like kind of making me want to be deaf. You know what I mean? So I'm kind of a little apprehensive, if you could say, with the possibility of that ever happening. And there's so many different theories. Some people say, oh, no, someone has a cigarette near a heater or something. And I mean, we're talking like 50, 60 years ago when people would do that. You know, obviously things have changed a lot since then. Yeah. But, you know, I said, oh, geez, you know, okay, so strike that off the list of best possible, you know, spontaneous human combustion scenario. What else is going to be happening? So, but it's because it's such a, you know, you don't know what the person has gone through like seconds beforehand. Did they know it was happening? Because there's no sign of a struggle. It just happens and they're there. You know, there's no, like, they're lying on the floor, they're sitting on a chair. It's like, so it just happens so quickly, they just die instantly. It's like, but do you not feel pain? How did you know it was not going to happen? Was it inflamed? Like, it's such an intense heat, there's scorch marks and all sorts of parts of the location when it happens. So it's an intense heat, an instant death. And I mean, I haven't said goodbye to anybody. This is other part as well. So like, I'm really annoyed, very stubborn. But I think for me, it's that lack of control. But it's like, imagine sitting there at work and suddenly burst into flames. Like, I didn't get paid for this.
Right. I had a conversation with a friend of mine like a year ago, and he was basically touching on that, on somebody he knew in the medical field. The person had died from inside out, from burns in his organs inside out. So he was talking about spontaneous human combustion. You know, I never heard that. I love learning new things, but I've never heard of the body burning inside.
And it's from the inside out. That's super right. Freaky. Like that's a whole other, I mean, it does kind of fall under the paranormal sort of, or you know, supernatural style sort of category. But then you think, oh, gosh, what part of biology would that fit into? It doesn't, because it's, you know, people, oh, well, you know, you see people with their limbs are okay and their arms are okay and their head's okay, but their torso is just burnt to a cinder. It's like, how does that happen? How does your body decide, no, oh, today I'm just going to burn myself inside out? How's what's, you know, again, it's that, you know, what's the perfect lasagna or not perfect that allows that to happen in a body? Like, it's fascinating stuff, but absolutely scares the bejeebies out of me. And that's you, and still does. So you're 100% right.
So, you know, you hear about the UFOs over these farmlands where the animal is suck dry of its blood or internal parts gone, you know, or the heads are missing and there's no blood. I mean, you just wonder what with the human body. And then, like you were saying, there's different parts of that, of burning, you know, maybe burping and blowing out fire, you know.
That's exactly right. After a curry, I completely understand that. But yeah, I know what you mean.
But, you know, I just came up upon that, and that I seen that you had mentioned that, and that brought back memories of my buddy last year. And I was curious because I've never talked to anybody in the paranormal about this.
I'd love to go to Skinwalker Ranch. I know that probably sounds very 2018.
Right? I watched every one of those, and that's what I'm referring to. Is, you know, like the animals that were affected. And since then, I've had guests I've talked to that same thing. You know, they're the same incidents. You know, where an animal is the death is not right. I mean, it's just not. It doesn't lie. It doesn't fall on our guidelines of how an animal should die or. Where did the blood go?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And again, it's understanding animals and biology, but also what nature does. Like, how would an animal end up being that way? And it's so unnatural that we're like, there has to be another explanation to this. And I guess again, you can, and with the awesome thing about the paranormal, you know, as a topic, then it can, you know, spread on to things like cryptozoology. So, okay, so there's other animals out there that we're still trying to understand that, or, you know, or creatures of some sort that we don't have a lot of exposure to, or there's sightings of that people see, they haven't been verified by science, like little things, you know. You can't sit there and go, well, you know, people all around the world have seen this one particular, like say for instance Yeti or Bigfoot or Yowie. You know, we can't sit there and say these people haven't seen something all around the world for, you know, the last 50 odd years. They're seeing something out there, and all their reports collaborate with a very similar thing. So again, it's like, how is nature dealing with this? Like, you know, the sense of like animals dying in a certain way to animals actually existing in a certain way. So, I mean, we don't know everything that's under the ocean. You know, there's so much under there. There's creatures there that have never seen light, and we'll never see them, but they're there. But, you know, so it makes you think there's just, this world is incredible.
Yeah, you were talking about the Skinwalker Ranch. Mm-hmm. Another topic, you know, that came out last year was the Pentagon's release of the UAPs. What's your thoughts on that?
I think it's still too early to actually take that in a bit as far as I think it's a little bit too early to make any assumptions on that as per yet. I'm glad. I mean, obviously there's Project Blue Book as well, which, you know, there's bits of that obviously coming out and has been out in parts as well. So having been to Area 51 myself, or to the edge of, sorry, not been to, because you get shot. Clearly, right. I do not have any free piercings from the federal government. But no, it's. I think I personally want to spend more time and actually go through it properly to actually make a proper assumption and or a view on that. Again, I've a side thought from that, as I think it's very, I'm going to say politely, but not politely saying, I think it's arrogant to think we're the only people in the universe. I think, you know, how vast that of what our knowledge is, to think that, oh, okay, well, there's no such thing as aliens. They've never visited. That's it. You know, okay, it's closed. I think it's extremely arrogant to think that way. There's way too much going on. There's way too much possibility. So I think in situations like that, I want to read more, understand more, and then make a bit more of an idea of that. But I think it's very wise to be open. about this kind of stuff.
Like you were saying, you know, the universe is so huge. I mean, we're just a speck. I mean, you know, and I love the what happened just recently when they released that telescope that can look into the next galaxies. You know, so it's going to be interesting to see. I mean, the information coming back might be after we're long gone, you know, but it is interesting just to see that you can see into another dimension of the universe, you know, and we're just a little planet. There's so much out there. Then I was just curious, you know, because when the Pentagon released those UAPs, I was excited that they did it, that they finally are recognizing what millions of people around the world are finally seeing, you know, unidentified objects in the sky, submergible craft, you know, and it's hard to deny that your highly trained pilots are capturing this. It's not your Joe Blow guy next door that, you know, drinking tequila. It's out there spotting these things. These guys are professionals and hundreds of millions of dollars in these aircrafts. So I don't pass that off. You know, what bothers me is about the people that have lost their lives, you know, in the past since Roswell, you know, and before.
Yeah.
You can't explain where their body is.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And just, you know, it's, I remember picking up a book on I'm not a big novel and or book person reader. I'm very much a visual, you know, videos or lectures, like visual learning in that sense. So for me to pick up a book and read it from beginning to end, that can take many years. But one of the first ones I picked up was about a detective that was actually on the site of Roswell when it happened, and it's his expose basically. And he's like, "This is what I found. There was an alien there. This is what we did. This is what we did to cover it up." And I was absolutely fascinated by it. I was so intrigued by it, but it opened up my mind. And he spoke about the fact the possibility is like, well, think about the advancement in technology from the time that Roswell happened to even 5 or 10 years. Like, there was such an extreme advancement of technology, like night vision goggles and silicon and all this kind of thing. Because that's been, because he believes was taken, the technology from that was taken and then eventually implemented out into society. And I thought that was a really interesting thing to obviously read and obviously learn a bit about as well. Like I said, keep your mind open. It's, you know, you never know. To me, it made sense. I know some people think, oh, you're sounding crazy, but at the end of the day, I think it's best to keep your mind open. Like, because it made sense to me. You know, it's such a quick advancement.
You're right. You know, like 40 years ago when I was in Florida visiting my sister-in-law, and her neighbor was a retired Air Force. I don't know what he did in the Air Force. I do know he was at Roswell. I do know that he knew a lot about that incident because he worked there at that time.
Wow.
And so that was one of my most interesting conversations was with him. Mm. He couldn't tell me everything that happened, you know, naturally, you know, but he did say all the aircraft or all the debris or whatever that falls from the skies that hits the earth is at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base in Dayton, Ohio. Mm-hmm. You know, so my wife and I were there. And you, yeah, like you said, you can't get near, like, you know, Hangar 18. You know, you can't get near that. But isn't it interesting that they in their gift shop they have trinkets you can buy?
You know, I love it. It's the best. I went to the Area 51. A little alien, and I've got my Area 51 number plate. And well, as if you're not, I came from Australia.
You know, I was there. You know, and I thought that was just interesting. He said everything is sent there. You know, so everything that was from Roswell was sent to Wright-Patterson. And what he basically told me was, you know, the best part of that whole story was the cover up of the cover up. You know, and so it was really a deep conversation, but he really, he didn't brush it off as like being crazy or nonsense. It was something that was unexplained that is still there, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's as I said, you know, and reiterating, I think it's silly to think that, you know, we're the only live creatures somewhat in this vast universe. And you know, to think that it's a nothing that is more advanced and has not made its presence known in different ways over hundreds and thousands of years, may not even been of recent years, you know. So I think, a mind is better to be open with that kind of stuff. Absolutely, 100%.
I'll be right back with the rest of my conversation with Beth Darlington.
Hey, I'm your host, Wendy, and you just listened to another episode of the Juicy Pear Podcast. Thanks for listening to the show. I really appreciate it. And I would love it if you could subscribe, rate, and leave a review. Each week, I have new content, and I love talking with creatives. Tell your friends and family. And if you're feeling led, hey, you can buy me a coffee on ajuicypearpodcast.com.
This is Jerry Ayers with Supernatural Investigators of Minnesota, and you're listening to Ghosts in the Valley podcast.
And, you know, another thing, another topic I wanted to ask you about was when you're hit with something, somebody else hit you with the same topic, and it was doppelgangers.
Yes.
What's your thoughts on that?
Oh, fascinating. I interviewed a lovely lady who was pulling all sorts of cases around the world for a book. And her name escapes me. It's terrible that I've forgotten her name. She was a lovely lady. I interviewed her on my own podcast. Mm-hmm. And she said there's doppelgangers, and there was, I think she said, shadow twins or same twins. So there's a difference. Doppelgangers was a definition of somebody seeing somebody who looked like them, and then they were to pass or have something bad. But then same twins, I think it was one where you actually see somebody that looks like so much like you, and nothing bad is to happen to you. So, and I thought that was interesting, because a lot of time you and I and anyone else goes doppelganger, oh, it must just be somebody that looks like you, but apparently it's quite a foreboding thing that means you're going to pass or have bad things happen to you. So that was fascinating. The first thing I learned when talking with her. But I think it's really interesting. I mean, technically, you know, I have an identical twin, so I'm like, I already have one, so I've ticked that box anyway.
We ought to come to Ohio. We have a every year festival. It's a little town called Twinsburg.
No way.
And it's a festival all twins get together on that one day.
That'd be weird and creepy at the same time.
It is, you know.
That sounds awesome.
But this doppelganger, you know, when he was talking, the last person I was talking to about it, he was telling me, we looked it up, and there are supposedly, by scientists, you have six people that's you out there that not only looks like you, identical, but also has the same characteristics, talks like you, looks like you, dresses like you, actions like you, around the world, you know. And yet another guest told me that it's not just of this day and age. It could have been like back in the 1700s, you had a Beth Darlington look just like you, you know, had the same characteristics as you.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a deep subject. And then my brother, at the same time as I'm having this conversation with three different people, my brother sends me a picture, and it looks like me. You know, without even talking to him about it. And I'm like, this just totally blew my mind. I mean, I'm like looking at myself, you know.
That's crazy.
And then the same night, I have a guest on, and we're talking about doppelgangers, you know. Mm. And that's when I really, I said, you know, this is coming at me pretty quick. Mm. And I don't know. It would be wild to run into somebody that's identical to you. I mean, you have your identical twin or your twin.
I'm done.
You know.
It would be very confronting, I think, because I know who mine is, but if someone then was to turn up in the street and look like me, then yeah, I would be quite taken aback, particularly, you know, it's, and then you think, okay, is it a type of genetics where if you're genetically, don't even have to be from the same family, but your family had similar genetics to someone else's family, so of course someone else is going to look quite similar to you. But I mean, that's a one in a million to look really similar, almost like a twin to somebody else. And then of course my mind goes, ooh, maybe this is a version of string theory. It's like,
oh, it could be.
Right. And then we get into a whole other ball game with that stuff. So, it, you know, maybe there's something where, you know, there's two different, like you said, like, you know, it's the sliding doors thing where someone's actually chosen to make a decision and then it's ended up being this. And then they end up having a child that end up being the same age as you or similar age. And then they grow up and then you end up looking like them and they look like you, but then you just happen to cross. Like, it literally, the you know, the world's your oyster when it comes to this. It's incredible. But yeah, it's, I think, you know, to have, I mean, I've seen on Facebook, not that you believe everything on Facebook, but there's been a couple of interesting photos, and I'm sure you've come across them as well, where there has been somebody from the 1800s and there's been somebody from now, and they literally look like the same person. And you think, oh, you know, it's not like it's, you know, photoshopped in any way. Like, that looks pretty convincing. So how can somebody hundreds of years later from a completely different part of the world look like somebody in another part of the world? Like, it's got to be some kind of weird genetic thing going on. Oh man, it fascinates me.
Right. You know, same here. What's your thoughts on life after death?
Oh man, how much time do we have? Oh, it's like, so Al asks, what's the meaning of life? Well,
right. Well, there's some people that believe that when you die, you either go to heaven or you go to hell. There's no in between and there's no waiting. Yet there's other people who believe you go somewhere, like, say, if you don't believe in heaven or hell. And I had a guest on that told me that there is no heaven or hell. So when you move a spirit on, or they move themselves on, you're actually killing that spirit. So they're not going anywhere.
Wow.
So, I mean, you have all these different people with all these different views on, you know, death. So I'm just curious. I mean, I personally believe there is life after death.
Mm. I'm definitely very open to it. Definitely very open to it. I think from what I know from this side of the fence before passing over is that there is something. There is definitely something on the other side. What it is, I don't know.
Well, your life after death, could that be a ghost? I mean, could your ghost...
It could be.
...or spirit? Because we, I say that, I'm writing a book right now, and the book is on a house I grew up in that was haunted. And we're talking 50-some years ago, 55 years ago when I was 12 years old. So to me, that girl that was I seen in the house, and then when we moved out, well, we lived there 4 years, so we moved out, our landlord of that house told my mother that a young girl died in that house, you know. So was that girl that I seen, my sister seen, you know, like five other people saw, was this her?
Yeah.
So that's another deep, deep question.
Oh, fantastic. I was about to say, you'll let us know when you finish the book.
Yeah, this thing could be forever because, you know, it's a true story, but I'm trying to... I'm digging back in my memory, and I'm talking to my sister and a few other people that were there at that time that are still living, and then trying to find information on that house that I grew up in, because the house had burnt down since then. So there's no history of it, you know. So I have to go through the library to look at past histories of these homes, you know, in the area. And also on the city hall, what information they had. All they can tell me is the house was burnt down in 2005. Mm-hmm. Talking to a psychic medium that was on the show, and she was talking about, you know, how can a ghost or a spirit manifest into a property or land?
Mm-hmm.
Or was that spirit in that house? Was the house built on burial grounds?
Mm-hmm. That's true. So true. And I often ask, you know, so for the fact that you know, grown up in a house and seen this apparition, and for me it's like, okay, so why would an apparition show themselves? And that's where I go, and I was like, is she distressed? Was it just you? Was it other people? Like, I start to think, well, you know, when it comes to hauntings like that, I think, you know, the first thing I go to, because a lot of mediums will say to me, there has to be a reason why a spirit will show itself or do what it does to that person. There has to be a reason. We're not always going to know everything. Trust me, if we knew that happened, we'd be able to set everything up. There'd be no such thing as spontaneous phenomena. You know, it would just be planned. If we knew how it worked on the other side, that'd be great. But it is, it's like, so why were you at that time? Why? And then, of course, the place burning down, all that kind of stuff. Like, that kind of stuff really fascinates me.
Right. And I've never seen a ghost since then. So so it's like, I'm not a person who sees things like, or at that time, nor did I even believe in it. You know, so it was like, you know, I seen her when we moved in, I seen her when we moved out. So those 4 years in between, I didn't see anything, but it was, it was, those 4 years in between was a whole lot of activity, you know what I'm saying? Not just with me, but with my friend who came over to spend the night, you know, and he did not spend the night. He had his mother pick him up probably about midnight, and he was not, and he never came back to that house. So, I mean, so it wasn't an evil thing.
No,
it was just a, if I knew what I know now, then who do you talk to in 1967?
Yeah.
Who do you talk to about this?
Yeah.
Because especially when your parents don't believe you and that's never happened in front of them, who do you talk to? So I have people on my show, like, you know, why they come on the podcast or other podcasts, because they can talk to someone who will listen to them.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. 100%, because it's, and that's what, when the information I've provided for people who want to look at doing private residential cases, it's not necessarily trying to find another spooky place to investigate. You know, you're dealing with people's experiences, their fears, how they're dealing with it, and also feeling isolated, like as you would have felt as well. You're in a house, you're experiencing this, and someone, your friend has experienced it, never came back to the house, but then, like you said, who are you going to talk to? So when people approach investigators that do take on cases, that's the first thing, is compassion. It doesn't matter if it's not haunted or is haunted. That at that point is irrelevant. It's actually compassion for someone who's experienced something. They're not really sure what the hell's going on, sort of stuff. So, you know, and it's that kind of thing. So it's like, it's not like, oh, let's go explain. Let's go, you know, sort of hang out in someone's haunted home. It's like, no, no, no. It's a whole different ball game. It's a whole different seriousness that a lot of people don't realize. And about it, it's literally people management and compassion for what they've experienced, because it's, you know, being frightened in your own home, especially when you're a child, especially, like, that's really intimidating. You don't want to be scared in your own home. You want to feel safe. That's your haven. But especially also when you've got parents that are very skeptical about what you're saying. Oh, well, you know, it doesn't matter, blah, blah, blah. Or you didn't see that. It's like, no, I know what I saw, but they're going to try and, you know, do the best they can.
Yeah. If I mentioned a ghost to my mom, I'm grounded. You know, so it's, don't talk crazy crap, you know, it's like, so that's what, you know, so I didn't have anybody really, except my sister, when she witnessed what went on. And it's an interesting book. I don't want to get too much out there, but I had a guest on since then, and she's telling me her ghost story, and I'm sitting back, listening to her story. And she says, "How are you still there?" I'm like, I was so intrigued with her story, because her story was my story. Mm. Everything that happened to me.
And I bet, like, that must have felt wonderful, wonderfully validating, the fact that at least you know.
I told her, "You're not going to believe this, because if you read my book," I said, "when it does come out and you read, it's not that I stole your story, but what you're what you're telling me has happened to me." Because you know, you're told your whole time growing up, you know, ghosts don't exist. They just don't exist. It's not out there. It's in your imagination. You're making it up, you know. And so I just stopped talking about it to family and friends, because, you know, you lose friends along the way, especially if you're in that era. I mean, today, I think you're a little more, with the internet and everything that's out there, you have other avenues you can go to or listen to different podcasts, different radio shows, watch Ghost Hunters or whatever's on TV. But back then, there was really not much out there, you know, until Art Bell came along with Coast to Coast Radio. And when I went into the paranormal, it's because, you know, I basically, what happened to me in 67, I can't go out here, even though I've never seen Bigfoot or a UFO, I'm not going to tell somebody it's not there. Mm-hmm. You know, that's like them telling me what didn't happen in your house. Your upcoming events, probably by the time this episode is released, these events will already have taken place. But I was curious about a couple of them. You have the Parapsychology Australia Online Conference. What's that about?
That's an online one that I'm attending, as opposed to actually being a part of. So there's a couple of them I've kind of pulled back a bit, because obviously it's everything's starting to slowly pick up again. So as far as actually me being able to go to any of these, in the future, it's been obviously quite COVID-y. So was it kind of decided to throw a sort of like a fire extinguisher on that one. But I'm actually attending what is known as ASIPS conference, which is happening in September, in the first weekend of September. And I went to the first one when I first actually came over here, and I really enjoyed it. ASAP is ASSAP for anyone who wishes to look it up as well. Really good logical information, great organization. So I'm going to that conference. as an attendee. I obviously had spoken at their online conference a year and a half ago as well, which was really great to be a part of it. That was their conference, but obviously was done online because of COVID. That was really and such an honor to be able to do that as well.
So you're going there via virtual conference, or you're actually going to Australia?
This particular one for ASIP is actually in the UK. It's in the Bath University in Bath. Okay. Yeah. Yes, it's going to be. It's probably because of having to pay for a wedding in not too distant future. One's finances are slightly restricted when it comes back to going to Australia to hang out with peeps there. So I will eventually get there, definitely in the next couple of years, but it's going to take a couple of years because it's not down the road from the UK. But yeah, so as far as anything in Australia at the moment, possibly not as yet. But definitely places here in the UK, 100%, of course, which is nice finally to have that as well.
What is the satanic flea market?
Oh, so that they have that every year. And I go because I'm just curious. I'm not definitely not a Satanist. You know, that's just, I'm just curious to see how all this stuff works. I'm just thinking, you know, walking with an open mind that I'm going to, I think is in the next month. Hopefully, fingers crossed, I can, if I'm going to be in London, because half my time is in London. The other half is in Kent. The Kent countryside, which is south of London, where my fiance lives. So I live part time with him and then part time in my flat in London. No, it sounds terrible. I know, third world problems, really. But so you have the best of both worlds. You've got the English countryside and you've got the beautiful city of London. Mm-hmm. But so hopefully I would. And that I went, as I said, a couple of years ago and had all different weird stuff. And they've also in London, they've got the Lost Boys pizza restaurant, which I want to go to as well in the next couple of months. And they have like black sourdough pizza and they've got like, you know, a pentagram sauce on it and all that kind of, anyway. So it's really just, you know, just, it's just fun stuff. It's just different. It's out there, very eclectic in that way. So, and of course it'll have to be in Camden. If anyone knows London, Camden's very much open to that sort of side of life, but relax everybody. I'm not rolling in and having a laugh with the devil, the Satan. It's okay. I'm fine. I've always had an open mind to very different and eclectic things. So that's where that comes from.
Then you have the psychophysiological investigation of trance mediums.
Yeah, that's an online one, I think. So that's going to be really interesting again to attend as well, because it's kind of, I think it's important to, because there's the Society of Psychical Research here, which is SPR, and they're a great organization. And a lot of their online events can be, obviously they are very quite academic, which is great, but I think it's also good to attend them to get a level of that as well. It's not, I think it's good to involve yourself with that level of knowledge. Now, I am very, I'm somebody who's never been to university, and I do sometimes struggle with the language that people use with academic languages in research papers. So there are times when I'm reading, trying to read a research paper that within the first paragraph, my mind's already gone. I'm like, I'm struggling to concentrate on this fantastic information. So attending this online stuff can be really good because it's a lot more interactive and visual. And I for myself, tend to understand it better. I think it's important as investigators to be open to academic information and research that has been happening for the last 150 years. So we're not kind of like, you know, reinventing the wheel when it comes to doing our own work. So, yeah, really good.
What else you have coming up this year?
There's a couple of projects on the side, and I hate saying that because then I turn around and say, but I can't say anything until I can actually say something. So it's one of those things, unfortunately, I wish I could say, but there's things I've been involved with, which I'm wonderfully and wholeheartedly appreciative of being asked to be involved, particularly since I haven't been able to make as much room and progress that I wanted to when I first got here to the UK because of COVID. It really hindered it. So I'm actually quite thankful to have been asked to be part of certain projects. So eventually at some point I will be able to actually mention that. But I also have been going to Ghost Club meetups as well. The Ghost Club are fantastic, very interactive. They have meetings, they have talks. They're now their talks are face-to-face. So you go into the centre of London, go there and just all different types of talks, different types of topics. Ooh, it's fantastic. It's really good. So I'm very happily active within the Ghost Club as well as the Society of Psychic Research and ASIP as well. So yeah, it just keeps me busy. Just keeps me, which is great. Not complaining.
Well, thank you, Beth. I'm going to put all your links in the bottom of this episode. Thank you for coming back on and sharing some more stories with me and knowledge. And I thank you very much.
Thank you so much for having me once again.
It's always a pleasure having Beth Darlington on the show. It's been a couple of years. I'm sure I will have her back on again. Do go to Beth's links at the bottom of this episode. And I will see you in 2 weeks with another great episode on Ghosts in the Valley podcast.